Hello and a very good evening to you. Welcome to On the Front Foot. This is the August edition of Suzy Radio's Cricket Chat Show. My name's David Jay. Tim Bowling is the other side of the panel as my co-presenter, as always. And this month's pundit is Jim Grant from Sevenoaks School, Caterham on the Hill and sundry other places along the way. We're very pleased that David Gentles is coming in because South Nutfield are flying high at the top of the Surrey Downs this year. David will be here round about 7:30. Ray Watson's coming, our first Surrey Premiership Club representative, and we're really looking forward to that. Ray will be here after 8. And if you'd like to get in touch with Tim Bowling or with me during the month before the next On the Front Foot, you can email tim at susyradio.com, S-U-S-Y radio, all one word, or david.jay, spelt J-A-Y, at susyradio.com. Here we are again, gentlemen. Jim, very good to see you.
Good evening. Hello.
It's nice to have you here. I can't believe 2 months have gone by.
No.
I'm sure you'll have plenty to tell us in a moment about what's occurred with you in the interim. And Tim, safely back from town.
Yes, got back from London okay today.
Keeping an eye on the Ashes.
Yes, indeed.
Which
yes,
were going indeed. Really well, but not so well in the last couple of hours.
No, not at the moment. Australia were all out for 284. England at 10 for naught, I think, at close. So we trailed by 274 runs, which didn't seem possible early on in the day.
Anyway, let's talk about the Ashes in due course.
Yes.
And before I ask Jim how the Min CC are going on, including their tour, I must thank Councillor Keith Foreman and also an old friend of mine, Chris Morgan, who's a Welshman in Tunbridge, for their assistance in spreading the word about tonight's show on social media early in the day. So thanks to Keith and thanks to Chris, and we wish you both well. Now, Jim, you've been on tour, and how's the Min going in general?
Yeah, well, we had a lovely tour down in the West Country. We had a game, first time we'd ever played in Cerne Abbas in Dorset, a really beautiful place.
Where's that in Dorset?
It's sort of on the road, sort of south between sort of Shepton Mallet and the coast. It's on that road. It's famous for its the Cerne Giant, who's a kind of chalk figure carved into the hill. He's a very well endowed chalk figure.
Yes.
But they were lovely people, and we won that game. We played Blagden Hill in Somerset, and our Ashes game is against a team called Broadway and Horton. It's a long story. We've been playing them since the late 80s. And in that game, we made 197 and bowled them out for 33.
Oh, wow.
So that was a
convincing win.
Well.
Yeah. Shades of England.
Yeah, I was going to say.
At Lords, about which one later.
And then at the weekend, we won playing Kingstonian up at Tiffin, at the Tiffin Ground.
Oh, that's a nice place to play. Yeah. Grist's very nice too. Mm. And you don't play at Stourhead any longer?
No, that's... it used to be our Saturday game, and it fell by the wayside because of league cricket, and couldn't accommodate tourists at the weekend.
As things do. It's the only time I've ever been to Stourhead, and instead of going round the house and gardens, I sat watching cricket.
But it's very beautiful. It's very lovely. We were very lucky to play there for many years.
Yes, indeed. The Cerne Abbas Giant. As far as I remember, the long man of Wilmington outside Eastbourne isn't at all. But, but there we are. Anyway, moving on to everything that's happened in the last 2 months since we've seen Jim, in the month since Andy Tharp was here, and I can scarcely believe that it's less than 3 weeks ago, Tim, that England won the World Cup at Lords.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I mean, what a fantastic victory, and one of the greatest games ever in one day cricket, and who'd have thought after all that, even after the Super Over, the scores were still level.
It's
amazing.
It was extraordinary.
Yeah.
We were travelling back from my niece's wedding in Glasgow, so we listened to the whole thing on the radio, and wonderful listening to it on the radio, I've got to say. I love the radio commentary. But we got back to see the last hour, basically. And even my daughter's Italian boyfriend, who doesn't really, although he has fielded for the men, doesn't really understand what's going on in cricket, was just hooked on the kind of the whole the intensity.
Well, the fact that it was also put on terrestrial TV, it must have had a huge effect on people, and there would undoubtedly be youngsters playing cricket as a result of that match going forward.
It's an object lesson. I think we've said this before. It's such a shame that it isn't Test match cricket isn't available on the television. But there you go.
The challenge, I suppose, is making that impact last.
Yes,
once it disappears.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I guess as well the fact that we've got an Ashes series straight after. The World Cup, that helps to try and keep people hooked. If you want to keep people hooked, easy to do, or not easy, but easier to do it when you're playing Australia in an Ashes series, especially after the day we had today. So, yeah, but, I mean, incredible tournament, all told.
Well, the tournament really demonstrated that it's good to have a little bit in the pitches for bowlers, didn't it? I mean, everyone was sort of expecting that it was going to carry on going the way that 50 over format has been going, where 350, 360 seems to be almost like the norm. But in English conditions,
it was nice.
280 was a really good score.
Yeah.
It became a much more interesting game, I thought.
We've discussed, haven't we, the way in which, to a lot of intents and purposes, it was an IPL style tournament and the presentation was for subcontinental consumption on the assumption that India might roll everybody over and win it comfortably. I've got an article in front of me, and I'd like to ask you the question. Can age turn titans like Dhoni into a liability? Because he really, the stonewalling in those last knockout rounds was extraordinary, wasn't it?
It was odd to watch at the time because there didn't seem to be any logic behind it, but then it was sort of semi-explained as that he was trying to potentially protect the run rate that India had in case that it became crucial, which I suppose you can understand, but at the time just seemed bizarre watching players block out a game and having no intention of winning. But if it was the run rate they were trying to protect, well, I suppose there was a tactic behind it, but it was odd.
And it's the sort of thing which I suppose, now that you've said that, would appeal to the Dhoni mindset.
Well, I it's difficult because he took a lot of stick, didn't he, during the matches when he was doing that, and I suppose in hindsight he probably knew what he was doing, but it was just a bizarre thing to watch. For spectators, it was very odd.
I suppose net run rate is a blessing. There are so many wheels within wheels, aren't there? People arguing, well, in the old days, New Zealand would have won it by virtue of losing fewer wickets. Which certainly would have been the case until not so very long ago, Jim. And that's the way almost everything was decided, bar the Richie Benno rain rule in 1992 when South Africa needed 22 off one ball.
That's right,
Even Richie's halo slipped just that
once. Was that his rule then at the time?
He was heavily involved.
Because it was after that that they then brought in Duckworth Lewis, wasn't it? Was it not as a result of that going wrong that they decided to bring in Duckworth Lewis?
I think it was a sort of factor in the development of it.
At the end of the day, the fact that they got the scores were tied, and ultimately it came down to the most boundaries, and everybody was trying to work out what the rules were, and ironically, it was the super over was a hangover from the Stanford T20 series from several years ago, and we all know where Alan Stanford is now, in prison. But that's one of the things that was retained from that particular series was a super over
that started with that series of his in the Caribbean, didn't it?
Yeah, the black bats and
was
all that.
Was that before or after he flew into Lords in a helicopter with $20 million in a glass box?
I can't remember. I think it might have been before. I think he came into Lords after it. And he landed, didn't he, on the nursery ground and all that.
Do we think that's ever so slightly emblematic of some things that have happened since?
Yes, exactly.
It's certainly a game with money in it, isn't it? Do we think, several people have said to me, do we think that there was a case when the super over also was tied for the cup being shared?
I don't suppose you can share a trophy like that. I felt for the New Zealanders, really, because I thought they'd been magnificent through the tournament.
Yep.
And then it looked as though they were going to fall away, and then they kind of rallied at the end, and the game against India was fantastic.
Well, the fact that they've had that's two finals in a row now, You know, they lost quite convincingly to Australia, didn't they? And then nearly beat us.
And I thought the dignity with which they lost was extraordinary, actually. It was a great example of the spirit of the game.
Indeed. Somebody also said to me, thank goodness New Zealand won the Netball World Cup.
Well, that was good. Karma.
Which, if perhaps a more minor sport to some, even than cricket is these days, was a consolation, a national consolation, without any doubt, because Australia were expected to win that by a street, I think.
I think their rugby team will have a thing or two to say in the autumn as well.
Very probably, although it's in Japan, you know. Jim, one bowl of dodgy sushi, you don't know where you are. But so what a remarkable World Cup. Now, another question for you, gentlemen. Was Simon Torfall stirring up Aussie sour grapes, or as the international education officer, was he standing up for the laws of the game when he pointed out quite rightly that in law it was five and Adil Rashid would have faced the next ball?
Well, yes, you're the umpire. I mean, he was right, was he? I mean, I think there's some. It's slightly ambiguous, isn't it? The wording of the law.
The law refers. I haven't got my law book because there's been a bit of hassle at a club of my acquaintance, and all my papers are with a certain Trowbridge M at the moment. I'll tell you about that off air because that wouldn't go. But as I understand it, it's overthrows plus runs completed at the moment the ball is thrown. And the long shot showed clearly that when Guptill threw the ball in, they hadn't crossed the second time.
The thing is, though, that's an unenforceable law, isn't it, if you think about it? Because it is absolutely impossible for the umpire, unless the throw happens to be coming from a position where you're in line with the throw and the batsman completing the run. How can you possibly... It's like a linesman sometimes trying to judge offside in football, isn't it? You've got to be looking at the moment. You've got to be looking in two places at once, so you can't possibly...
I can't remember what happened at the time. Did the umpires confer with... the third umpire at all at the time, or did they just
conferred with one another?
Yes,
one
but, another, but they didn't confer with the third umpire. So surely, on that occasion, there was the case for them to just confer with the third umpire and say, right, what's the law? What's happened here? Can we have another look at this to make sure? Is there anything here that we need to know? Because it's such a crucial part of the game. I don't think the crowd would have been particularly bothered if it had been stopped for 5 minutes just to check on the camera. As you're quite right, Jim. If you're not looking at that throw, there's no way the umpire could have known.
I don't see how the on-field umpire can.
No, the only way of doing that was to confer with the third umpire, which they didn't do.
But that said, no one in the crowd, none of the players, none of the commentators, so much as blinked an eyelid.
No.
Everybody said, heavens above, that's six. And Ben Stokes put his hands up.
Yeah, Ben Stokes straight away.
And he said, exactly. You know, I'll be apologising to Kane Williamson for the rest of my life for that. But it's crossed the boundary, it's four. And the question was whether it was 4+1, 4+2. And I say again, was Torfall being a good root and toot and roo shoot and Aussie, or was he just standing up for his job as education officer?
I suspect there was a little bit of both, to be honest, in that with him.
Anyway, not even Jim's friend and mine, Patrick Cartmail, could have scripted that one in his wildest moments.
Extraordinary.
It was incredible, wasn't it? It really
and
was.
Lawmakers attempt to legislate for absolutely every eventuality, but how could you?
I mean, I think the other thing to bear in mind is that because Stokes knew that there was going to be a super over, that last ball, he sort of just pushed for the single in the hope that he could try and get a second. Had that not been the case, I reckon he would have gone for that. I think he'd have actually gone.
That might be true. You can't say how things would have.
A number of the commentators said that. That said, five runs, would he have had the chance to face again?
Yes, that's the other possibility.
That's true.
So swings and roundabouts, and as we used to say when I was in my early 20s and starting to captain the odd cricket team, look in the book.
Yes.
and there it is. And there was a certain, you mentioned karma already tonight, Jim, there was a certain inevitability about it, even when I thought we'd blown it completely losing to Sri Lanka.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. At that point in the tournament, it did feel like we were. It was going to be another England failure in another, but this time in our own World Cup. And it did feel like we were starting to slip away. I think Roy was injured at the time, wasn't he? And you know, it just didn't feel like it was going to be our tournament.
And it was technically out of our hands. You weren't here last time, Jim, when we were saying a month ago just how much difference clearly not just Jason Roy but Liam Plunkett made to that side.
Yes, he's a real specialist in those middle overs, isn't he?
He's a good player. Liam Plunkett is one of those players that's been massively underrated over the years, and he's not really played the sort of cricket for England he should have played. No, I think he's a really useful player, and he was vital in that side.
Yeah, but Roy coming back was the crucial thing, wasn't it, really?
34 years old, Liam Plunkett, newly married, can't get a game for his county. Where's his future?
Well,
that's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Because if he's 34, he's not going to play in the next World Cup, is he?
No, he's not.
So what about Morgan?
Well, I mean, Morgan, he came across as super cool, didn't he? When he was sitting there in that final over, I think most people generally would have been agitated or, you know, up on standing up, whatever. He just sat there, super cool. I think he has taken criticism, Morgan, hasn't he, as England captain in the one dayers. But I think overall, he did a pretty good job in the end.
It's that calm exterior, isn't it? Sorry, Jim.
Well, from where they were 4 years ago, I think you have to give him a huge amount of credit for what he's done, pulling, you know, off the field as well as on it, in terms of pulling a group of players together and committing to a way of playing that, you know, at times people have said, well, that's just, it's a bit kamikaze, and there was criticism when they were clearly not going to change the, you know, attacking approach with the batting, but I think they stuck with it, and he's been proved right. So
I don't think it's particularly fair of me to feel this way, but I've always had a little bit of an instinctive aversion to mercenary figures. I always felt that just a little bit about Peterson going county to county and South Africa to England. And I felt that to a degree about Morgan, insofar as I'm not sure he's got 100% fan base in Ireland either.
No.
But as you say, Jim, from the perspective of now, take your hat off if you were wearing it to him. And I bet his heart was thumping underneath too.
Oh, definitely.
It's the old Morris Leyland line, Jim, isn't it? In the nets to a young Len Hutton before the war, and somebody, I don't know who, was ducking and diving, sending them past to Hutton's ear hole. And apparently Morris Leyland wandered down the wicket, and I won't do the Yorkshire accent. He said, thing is, lad, he said, none of us likes fast bowling, but some of us don't let on. And it's about not letting on.
Oh, yeah, he didn't let on at all. He sat there super cool, trying to, because he knew that there was still a job to be done. He was probably still trying to, at the time, he was working out, you know, how the Super Over was going to go, how they were going to approach it. I don't know whether they had to choose. I heard conflicting stories as to whether the players were chosen, or Jofra Archer was chosen prior to the match, or whether he was chosen in between the innings and the Super Over to actually bowl that super over. Different people told me different things.
A bit like picking penalty takers in football. Yeah. I suppose you have got to cover every eventuality in your planning, but it's almost beyond conceit there would be a super over.
Well, they mentioned it, didn't they? On the Sky commentary. No, well, they did mention it. I think about 10 overs to go, 10, 15 overs to go, one of the commentators said, there is a super over. And I thought at the time, don't be ridiculous. It's not going to come to a super over. And all the commentators laughed when he said it.
Yeah.
And the closer we got, you thought, this is on now.
And if you had picked someone prior to the game, what would you do if he'd gone for 80 odd in their tenor? I mean, you would.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty certain.
Yeah. Although, let's be honest, brave decision to pick Archer.
Well, it's also possibly looking around who's up for this, who's willing to do it.
Indeed.
And I think he's kind of young, and almost his lack of experience is probably a plus in that situation. There's no fear, is there?
It worked out for them. I was marginally surprised as it was happening that they sent Ben Stokes back out, because he was on his knees.
He was, but I guess he had his eye in, didn't he?
You'd have had trouble taking the bat
absolutely.
Off him, basically.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, he knew he was. I think he probably took the view, and I guess Morgan took the view that you're right, he was on his knees, but he probably thought he'll just hit fours and sixes, and that he's got his eye in, and
he's done well,
you know, he's only got to face another six balls maximum. But I think Jim, you're right. To try and you'd have struggled to not let him get out. Imagine if you said to him, "You're not going out, Ben." I think he would have gone out anyway.
I suppose it's worth pointing out in the aftermath that there have been other wonderful games of cricket. But this was an extraordinary game of cricket.
I'm just going to put in a word for Roy's throw.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's a pressure moment as well. Pick up and throw. He had to pick it clean, and he had to throw it straight.
Especially as he'd fumbled the one before.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
So he knew. When that ball came to him, he thought, I won't say the word, but he probably thought, oh, dear. And you're quite right. He had to pick that ball up and throw it in. And I guess...
But he had to attack it.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was a good throw.
This is Reigate Priory's Jason Roy all over the Surrey Mirror this week. Yeah. Just like Reigate Priory's Tim Murta, funnily enough.
Yeah, it's funny that.
But there we are. We need, gentlemen, to move on because David Gentles is with us shortly. Let's allow the World Cup to lie. And a week ago yesterday, I was fearing for my life as my heart rate literally began to rise in the heat in the front row at Lords. I have never felt so hot in all my born days.
You were very brave.
Out in the sun there. Now, obviously, my friend Ian Baker is on the ball, so he gets front row tickets because he's one of the first applicants. But I knew what I was in for, and I got away with it. But we spent about 2 hours in the after lunch, right up at the back of the grandstand, just leaning on the rail in a bit of breeze and the shade. Yeah. That said, and in spite of fighting with the heat for that time, I sat there in utter disbelief as Tim Murta of Reigate Priory Cricket Club rolled England out of sight.
Yeah, 5 for 13, wasn't it? Not bad. Incredible. Another incredible test straight after the World Cup. Just unbelievable. You know, we were all out first innings 85, and it looked over, didn't it? It looked like we were done.
Well, extremes for Lords. You know, the fourth innings of 38 and the highest temperature they've ever played in at Lords. And so Ireland's first test, it was fairy tale stuff again in a way, except for the visitors who weren't up to it when it came to it.
Well, yeah, they had done remarkably well up until that point, though, hadn't they? There was a lot of criticism of the pitch. I didn't really...
I thought Root was crying to teach her about that.
Do you think?
I do think. I've said it to you off air before we came on, including today. I have been deeply unimpressed by Root J since the World Cup.
Well, yeah, we can talk about today later on, but yeah, I think unfortunately, I think England have lapsed into that sort of habit of picking captains based on who's the best batsman, which I think is, and I think it was the same with Cook. I don't think Cook was a particular. I know he's, when you look at the stats, Cook achieved a lot as England captain, but as an actual tactician, I thought Cook was a poor captain. And I think Strauss was a good captain, but I think Cook was poor, and I think Root's poor.
I think the relationship with the coach is important, and he's a very hands-off coach, isn't he? So I wonder, he's giving up Bayliss, isn't he?
Yes, at the end of the Ashes.
Yeah. So I wonder whether under a more sort of hands-on tactician of a coach, that Ian Root might.
Well, also
because he's going to be captain for a fair old while.
Yeah. I wonder also whether, as you say, it's been hands off with Bayliss, but also the focus has been on the one day team hugely.
Yes,
and they have targeted the World Cup, which is fair enough. It was a home World Cup, and we've never won it, so they targeted the World Cup one day internationals, perhaps to the detriment, and even more so for somebody like Root, who perhaps isn't getting the tactical coaching, if you like, that he might have got if it was more spread across one days and test matches.
I felt that was very much the case in the winter series out there, where, you know, keep wrapping wood in cotton wool and not experimenting with Roy as an opening batsman in the tests at that point.
I'm not terribly keen on this mindset business, insofar as being devil's advocate, they are all extremely well paid professionals. They are almost without exception very highly skilled cricketers. It shouldn't be that difficult to switch from one code to another, even if all you do in switching is start leaving a few outside the off stump when the ball's swinging. I really think that Root compiles so carefully in one day cricket that you would think it would be a very easy transition for him. He looked totally at sea, and I thought Bairstow looked as if he'd been out all night on the first day at Lords. Quite extraordinary.
Well, he ended up getting a pair, didn't he, at Lords, the problem, I mean, Bairstow is somebody who is, as we've spoken about before, very complex character. The history of his dad and everything else has meant that he's emotionally, you know, probably emotionally taught most of the time, and it comes out often with Bearstone. You see it often when he gets 100, or when he gets out, or when he's always reviewing things, or whatever it is. So I think Bearstone is a sort of unique. Well, he is unique.
If you get a chance, they probably won't be on the highlights, but if you get a chance to see them walking out to do Jerusalem and so on this morning, you look at the contrasting facial expressions on the England players, and you look at Bearstone in particular. I'm not going to say any more than that, but you can see it all there. And I think it's significant to me as well that it was Sam Curran and then Broad and Stone who started dragging us back into the Ireland Test match with the ball. And only after that did the batting fire to an extent, but even then only to an extent. And then, of course, we had that hottest recorded day ever, and the weather went west. And, I mean, if Wokes had wanted a morning to bowl on at Lord's, then there it was. Though they were three out when I left home to drive to the studio, and by the time I turned that screen on, which is on my right-hand side now, they were all out.
I know. Incredible. Incredible, considering, you know, they scored 207 in their first innings, and they were all out for 38. It just, you know, just a capitulation. But it was unfortunate. I felt a bit sorry for Ireland, you know, given how much they'd achieved up to that point. But that's cricket, isn't it? And it's, you know, the conditions were such that Wokes had an absolute blinder, and we ended up winning, so...
Phil Yent from Outwood was listening to Mark Butcher on the Guardian podcast, saying he fears it'll slow Irish development, that all Irish players are now considered overseas, and thus the number who can play for county teams will be restricted from now on.
It's an interesting point.
Yeah.
I think it's a very good point as well, don't you? Yeah. So that was Ireland, and a truly remarkable event in many, many ways. And I'm glad I was there, but I wish I'd had a seat in the shade.
It's amazing how hot it is there at Lord's, isn't it? I remember being at a Lord's test a couple of years ago, and we were in the top tier of the Compton Stand. Wow. It wasn't quite as hot as your day, but it probably was about 30-odd, something like that, 30
but,
maybe.
But you're talking direct sunlight.
Yeah, and I remember sitting in there, and we sat there for the morning, absolutely roasting, and I think we probably spent about 2 hours in the afternoon sitting in the nursery ground under the big screen in the shade, because it was just too hot to go back and watch the cricket. And it's when you're sitting in that sun and you can't move, it's so hot there.
We're not going to get onto the Ashes, gentlemen, because it's time to usher David Gentles from South Nutfield into the studio. That's our look back at the World Cup and the Lord's Test against Ireland. We're going to take a little break. Welcome back to part two of four this warm Thursday evening, the 1st of August at Susie 103.4. David Gentles from South Nutfield Cricket Club. It's lovely to have you back to On the Front Foot.
Lovely. Thank you for inviting me back.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And no sort of strict agenda for what we're going to talk about in the next 20 minutes, but let's begin at the beginning. South Nutfield flying absolutely top of the stack in the Surrey Downs.
Yeah, wow. Who would have thought it? When I was here 2 years ago, I think I was talking about some of the struggles we were having in getting teams out, and suddenly this year it's clicked and we've won 11 out of 13, and only rain has denied us the other two games.
And looking at the weekly results I've been giving out on a Wednesday afternoon, it's been a real team effort.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's been the highlight of the season, is the fact that we're not relying on two or three players like Chris Walker and people that have been doing it for 15 or 20 years. The last game that we played against Tadworth, we were 97 for 6, and it kind of really looked quite bleak. And actually, people that hadn't even had a bat yet this season were kind of helping us out. And again, we got over the line.
Jim was still at Reigate 27 years ago when Chris Walker left school.
Yeah, he was in my under 15 team.
Yeah, he's still doing it. He still looks 15.
It's as long as that. And Chris was a bit unlucky, Jim, because he was in that Highgate era when there were so many good players in the first 11. And,
yes.
You know, he'd never quite...
He lacked power as a schoolboy.
That's true.
Power
as a
batsman, but he was very solid, wasn't he? Very reliable opening bat.
And a tremendous cricketing pedigree, of course. His grandfather was the cricket master at Caterham when I started there in 1962. It was E.L. Walker who said to me, "The thing about slow bowling, David, is it gives the batsman time to think."
Well, that's what Eddie Walker's been saying to me for at least 35 years.
Yes, this is Chris's dad, who, of course, was a power in his own right, David, going back. And Chris has been Mr. Consistency for you for a very, very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, this year, the good thing is that Chris can come off if he hasn't scored runs and he can be quite relaxed. I think there were times where if Chris felt the whole burden was on his shoulders, if he didn't get a 50, we'd be in big trouble.
How often have we seen that?
He
had 98 out, I believe, to a stunning battery catch.
Yeah, well, is that what he told you, was it?
That's what he told me, yeah.
Probably chipped it to gully, which is normally his routine mode of dismissal, but no, that was a great innings.
And of course, David, you've got another grammar school connection, because Jack Bellers, who came to the ground staff round about the time of my retirement, is a leading all-rounder for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jack has, I've seen him since he was 7 or 8, a bit of a tear away, and captaincy in the last 2 years has done him absolute wonders, and he's actually, and I know he'd hate for me to say that, but he's turned into a really lovely fella, and everyone respects him, and he's doing a business on the field as well.
Yeah, all I was doing, probably after my retirement from the grammar school, was a bit of umpiring, so I wasn't involved with the ground staff as I would have been in the old days with Jim's great friend and mine, the late lamented Harry Newton, who taught us all a whole bundle of cricketing wisdom in his time. He got some other names to name. Let's just talk about the Millses, David, if we may. We were talking off air.
Yeah. So, Ashley plays now and then for the seconds. He said his eyesight isn't too good to be able to continue in the first, but since seeing Courtney back 4 or 5 years ago, who's the younger Mills, he's now taken charge of so many things in the club and really turned things around. We've got the biggest all-star section, which is a junior cricket section in the whole of Surrey. He does a lot of the administration. He's been applying for funding to allow us to move into the 21st century with our ability to take kind of card payments, and that kind of link with the ECB, I think, has been really, really good.
Do you get involved with the cricket force thing at the start of the season?
Yeah, so we actually had Surrey down a couple of years ago and give the club a much needed makeover, and we have work parties kind of twice a year, 2-3 times a year now. So the more, as with all kind of clubs these days, it relies on a vast pool of volunteers to help things run.
Absolutely right. In terms of making over, are there any plans for the establishment at the moment?
We have a development plan, and I think the long-term plan, in terms of the growth that we've had for junior cricket and women's cricket, I think getting a new clubhouse would really set us on the kind of right foot for the next 20, 30 years. So I think that'll be our next big plan.
I've not been for a while. Have you played at South Nutfield, Tim?
I don't think I have played at South Nutfield, you know. I don't remember playing there. I mean, I've played with many of the players that play at South Nutfield, but I don't think I've ever actually played at the ground.
Come down. We've got some great new nets this year, so... that's been really
new
good.
Nets. Mm.
Yeah, so we had...
Where have you put those, David?
So they're on the south side of the pavilion, kind of facing up and down, rather than facing onto the field of play.
Okay.
We had a pretty good fundraising effort in the off-season, which was underpinned by Jan Skarbek, another kind of long-term member of the club, who kind of helped underwrite the nets, and everyone else chipping in. So
there's quite a strong connection with that.
These names are Min cricketers as well as South Nutfield cricketers. I've played for and against South Nutfield on many occasions.
Yes.
So.
I got a hat-trick at South Nutfield.
Did you now?
Nobody noticed. Right at Priory Sunday, and I got two of the last two balls. I mean, I bowled pies. I'm not a proper bowler at all. Got two with the two balls of one over, and one with the first ball of the next, and nobody even noticed.
Except you.
There's a slope at South Nutfield, Tim, which I think it's fair to say, David, tempts many to hit it on to the railway line, but even though many are called, few are actually chosen to do that.
Yeah, it's such a short boundary, and actually the last game I played, I got my 300th play cricket wicket, so someone told me it's near 1,000, but actually since modern technology took over, I can actually document 302 wickets now, so and I've been trading on that for a number of years, those short boundaries and trundling up the hill, but people still want to take me on, so long may it continue.
To me, it's as truly a village ground, Jim, as we've probably got
brilliant.
Here.
I love it.
Hence the Surrey Downs. David, before we go on to talk about league positions and so on, am I right in thinking that there is no automatic promotion from the Surrey Downs? You are where you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we've discussed this year, actually. I think the last 3 or 4 years, us and East Horsley have kind of been vying for top spot. And I must say, across the piece, I think the standard of cricket has kind of gone down a little bit. I'm sure we've discussed it earlier on, but I think there's a void in some really talented kind of 16 to 25 year olds, and I guess publicity around things like Fortnite and how you can make £1 million from your bedroom aren't really going to help that. But
if the opportunity was there, would you go up maybe to the Surrey Championship?
We've been thinking about Fullers. I mean, the one thing that we do enjoy and I think has helped our fortunes is the change from kind of timed cricket to limited overs has always really suited our game. We finish earlier, so a lot of our games are finished 6 or 7 o'clock rather than the old days where it was 8 or 9 o'clock and people couldn't go out afterwards. So I think if it included more travel, I think we'd be reluctant to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the good thing about the Surrey Downs League is that you're playing at some really nice clubs, some really nice grounds, and if you go into... I don't know the Fullers so well, but the Surrey Championship, you start progressing up those leagues and you tend to find that you're playing lots of sides in South London and you're playing at municipal grounds, and I think it there's a danger, I think, for clubs who are in the Surrey Downs League to think, oh, let's go into the Surrey. I'm not knocking the Surrey Championship, but I think from what you've said, it sounds to me like that it's, and you, David, you said it's a village, that village feel to the club, in a good sense, that it's a nice village feel. And I think it's easier to attract players when it's, as you say, a shorter game, you're playing at nicer grounds, and also if you're performing well, it's easier to get youngsters to come and play for a winning team. I mean, I played for Leatherhead for many years, and we were in the Premier League in the Surreys for the threes. We dropped down as we started to lose players, and a decision was made in the end to fold the third 11 for a couple of years. They've come back this year into the Surrey Downs League, and they've been doing very well in the Surrey Downs League with quite a young side. And that idea was, I suggested that idea several years ago, because we were just getting battered in the Surrey Championship, and people didn't want to play, and they didn't want to travel to South London. And so I think it's something to bear in mind, you know, that a step away from the Surrey Downs League may not necessarily be something which is positive. I think the Surrey Downs League is a great league.
David, I realise you can't speak for the club and the committee and so on and so forth. Something that's impressed me since the last reorganisation is the way in which the Sussex pyramid now stretches down on one play cricket website from the top of the Premiership to the very lowest clubs playing league cricket, and there is promotion and relegation throughout that structure. It's looking likely that Horsham, of all clubs, are going to be relegated to Division 2 at the end of
amazing.
This season.
Yeah,
they are really, really struggling. Now, that would offer an incentive to a club like yours, wouldn't it? Because the lower levels of the Fullers... I mean, well, you talk about villages. I mean, Jim, Newdigate are heading the Premiership at the moment in the Fullers.
Wow.
So they're likely to get into Division 5 maybe next year, possibly at the expense of Merstham up the road.
Right. Yeah, but only 4 years ago we were playing them, so I think that they're the trailblazers who we'd want to follow, and West End, Esher, and clubs like that. It is a balance. I mean, we've got some really good times now, but fundamentally... We've we've been on a cycle for 20 years where you suddenly start to get really ambitious and think in 5 years' time, and then the next week or the next season you're struggling to get sides out. So I think we do have to be careful about being realistic. I mean,
anyway, it's wonderful to see you flying 61 points clear, as I understand it. Chris did reinforce that when he sent this week's message that it had rained all weekend. But I did already know that. I mean, I love Chris's reports are brilliant because they are exactly what I want, no less and no more. They're terrific. You don't always get that from all of our correspondents. I'll be brutally honest, in journalistic terms, it's easier for me now to sit there on a Monday morning with the Play Cricket website and just go through everybody and take the bare bones. The problem with that is that there isn't really time to research all the individual performances and names like Lewis Davis, is he at Newdigate, got 100 and that didn't go out. One or two local teams, we'll be mentioning this later in the show, David, one or two local teams benefited from playing on a very wet Saturday this weekend, Newdigate and Outwood. I mention Outwood. Would you ever consider doing the Outwood and heading off to the KCVL?
We were just having this conversation earlier, actually, that Outwood playing in a different league in a different county to us is kind of that rivalry that I kind of grew up with 20, 30 years ago is kind of gone. I think with this new midweek Surrey Slam, that kind of rivalry has been renewed, and I think that's been a great addition to our cricket calendar.
Oh, clearly that local derby is one big thing. Mavericks against, well, the Outlaws, they call themselves.
Yeah, that's right.
But while we're on the subject, David, tell us about the Mavachicks.
Ah, the Mavachicks, yeah. I mean, this is something that I've been very passionate around for a long time. And Charlotte, the kind of captain and coach and driver and everything else, she's been doing a really wonderful job with resurrecting the women's team, who actually were in place in the 60s. And I don't know if you remember, but there was traditionally a women's team at South Nutford a long time ago, and I think that's one of the really good things for the club, is that the girls and women have an opportunity now, rather than just come down and cheer on their partners and their sons, and to actually play the game. And I think there are plans next year to introduce a kind of softball as well as a hardball team, and actually just provide pathways for anyone of any standard. So if you want to have fun and you want to come down and kind of play cricket to whatever level, then certainly I would encourage it.
Well, clearly Matt Camp has provided pathways galore with the Surrey Slam. It really is a wonderful undertaking.
Yeah, it's great. Great.
He's a good friend to us, and I hope we to him. But it's been good to see that. And interestingly, it's Hawley and Merstham locally who are coming through this year. So there we are. I mean, clearly, your men's local derby is quite a thing. I surmise from a distance that the Mavachicks are some way developmentally in front of the Outward Blazers at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because sport is so hard if you've not had something during school, and I guess a lot of the people that have been to school and probably won't have even tried cricket, so it's quite a scary thought. And what we're trying to do now is, people have maybe never even picked up a cricket bat, it's just to try and develop them and give them a go. But there is a vast range in kind of abilities across the team, but
at least the Outward Blazers can say they've already had a tour to La Manga.
That's right. Yes, we heard about that last
one weather tour.
We had Mary Briggs and Maz Graham in last month from the Outward Blazers. Tremendous value. Very good company.
Yeah, they were good fun.
And it's nice. I mean, I make no bones about it. I think the development of professional women's cricket and recreational cricket in the last 10 years, in the last 5 years especially, has been just wonderful for the game. And the fact that we've got Isha Gua and I can't remember the name of the other prominent lady broadcaster.
Ebony Rainford-Brent.
Funny you should say. Anyway, forgive me. What I was just going to mention, Jim, was that somebody I knew actually came and did a junior dinner for us, and there's a story to tell there in a moment, and lived locally. The late Jan Britton, who died of cancer in her 50s. I see reported in the press that Surrey are insisting that there's to be a room at the Oval named after Jan Britton.
Oh, good.
And she apparently will be the first lady cricketer thus honoured.
That's nice. Yeah. That's good.
The story, am I allowed to tell a story in your time, David?
Yeah,
just very quickly. We had a junior dinner, and at the time, Jim and I had a couple of cricketers, girl cricketers, at Ryan Highgate, who were playing in the Surrey under-15s or 16s or whatever. And I thought it'd be a nice idea to get Jan to come and do the prizes for the whole of this junior dinner, so she did. And then my former umpire, old Rygation, noted local cricketer, Bob Munn, who was treasurer at Rygate Priory at the time, this being the year that Ian Bishop was their pro, and nobody could catch it in the slips because it was coming like tracer bullets. Unbeknown to me, bless you, Bob, invited Ian Bishop to come to the dinner. And he said to me, and this is what I have always regretted, because Jan would have shared it quite happily. He said to me, oh, he's just a pro cricketer. He won't want to speak. And this is a man who now, 20 years later, is one of the finest commentators. <in the world. laughs> But that's Bob for you. So Jan spoke, and Ian dished out the prizes and so on. And bless him, I saw him at a Tamil tournament in a park in Bromley somewhere that Peter Shaw dragged me along to. And lo and behold, just as Alex Stewart did all those years at the Oval, Ian Bishop said to me, hello, how are you?
Oh, great.
And I thought that was tremendous. Richards was there that day, and Greenwich, and all sorts. Playing on a bit of
proper
parts that just been rolled out. Yeah. Let's get back to what we're supposed to be talking about, which is South Nutfield. We've talked about potential plans. Mm. So if I were to roll up, David, the footprint of the clubhouse is more or less as it's always been?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started there a long time ago, there was a wooden pavilion, which was a predecessor to the existing one. So I'm sure from a planning perspective, we have a little bit of scope to extend, and obviously going upwards is an option as well, and things that we've started to look at. There's such a good social scene now at the club. We need to look at how we make it a hub of the community rather than just a cricket club.
You've preempted my next question. Tell us about the social scene.
Yeah, the social scene. I mean, I'm now one of the kind of senior pros, and we've got some really good young people who like to stay after the game, and I know that's been a fundamental kind of how cricket has really, how village cricket has been really formed. I mean, there were stories when I was growing up of people that used to kind of stay after every game until the early hours and walk up the hill home, and that kind of, to a certain extent, with village cricket seems to have gone at some clubs we go to where we're staying behind longer than the home team, which is sad. But no, there's a really good social scene. The slam has really helped. Courtney has a decks out, has some music. We often have barbecues, and everyone just kind of chips in, whether they're juniors, whether they're girls and women, or the adults. So it is really good to see.
Decks out sounds like one of my former pupils. what do you think I'm doing sitting behind this desk? So are there any specific events? And presumably there's a cricket week coming up again at the end of this month.
Yep, we have our cricket week, which is one of the few kind of all day cricket weeks that still take place at the end of August. So that starts on Bank Holiday Monday at the end of the month. So pleasingly, most of the games are now being signed up with players, which is always good. Lunches are always fabulous. We host the fireworks in the village on fireworks night, which is always a good annual occasion. And this year, sadly, we had a World Cup open day that was kind of ruined by the weather. Yeah. But we do try and have kind of village events and trying to encourage people maybe that live more locally to come and see what we've got to offer.
Sounds good to me. Just backtracking for a second, I'm sure you're right about being able to keep youngsters at the club in the evening. I think this has been an enormous problem in the last 20, probably 25 years, when towards the end of my time at the grammar school, some of my first team players weren't in the least bit interested in playing Sunday cricket at Park Lane and staying afterwards to listen to the senior players. Yeah. And I learnt most of what I know about the game, propping the bar at old Cateramian's in the old days, and Cats as it became, and then listening to Harry in the pub, Jim. You assimilate it as a player, and you read books and you learn about, but it's propping up the bar with a pint, whether or not illicit, at a young age.
As you say, but that's thriving.
You know, the fact that you say you've got, you know, some music there and things like that, hopefully will encourage the younger players to hang around, because it's very easy just for them to say, oh, well, we're going somewhere else.
Yeah.
And if there's no atmosphere in the club, then they'll go. But if you've put, when you're doing stuff like that, it will encourage people to stay on and then realise actually it's quite good fun.
You know, there's two things that really helped us. One is Haribo's, Tempe Haribo's, and the other one's Wi-Fi. So you'd be amazed how much Wi-Fi will just get young people staying at home. I know. It's just really simple things. And 2 years ago, we didn't have it, and now we do, and people are staying.
If somebody makes a million in the club on, what's it called, Fortnite, do you think they'll donate a percentage?
let's hope so. We can put in some PlayStations or PCs, and people can play to their heart's content rather than their bedroom.
How times change. It is extraordinary, isn't it? But clearly, having, as you said, had that blip a couple of seasons back, all is flourishing again, and that's absolutely brilliant to hear. Any interesting sides coming in the Cricket Week?
Well, we've got the local Reigate Pilgrims, which is always an interesting one. We've got Putney coming this year for the first time when we lost a fixture. So we're trying a mixture of keeping people local, but then also broadening our offer to people maybe further afield too.
I'm not sure what Jim's commitments are at the end of the month, but if there's a possibility, we might try and get down.
That would be lovely.
For a day,
would be a good idea. We still play Pilgrims, of course. It's one of our September games.
Outside broadcasts.
Unfortunately, David, there are wheels within wheels as far as that's concerned.
We've got Wi-Fi.
We won't go there tonight. It would be absolutely lovely. Tim and I have talked about it more than once, and I'm sure Jim would be up for it. We could. I reckon between us, we could rival the Norcrosses of this world.
Oh, definitely.
I don't know who's going to be Phil Tufnell, Tim. But anyway, there we are. David, amazingly, we've got about a minute. Is there anything else while you're here?
Yeah, I was just thinking about how South Nutfield almost been a feeder club for the last few years. I think what's been really good beginning of last season was we actually managed to steal someone from Reigate Priory for the first time pretty much ever. So he's been, Chris Wigley's been a massive addition to our kind of spin bowling ranks, and you look at the stats each week and he's got 33 wickets. Quite frankly, the fact that we're top of the league and unbeaten without our player of the season last season, Alex Smith, who not only was a great player and he's had a broken leg sadly this year, who's on the comeback trail for the weekend. But those are the kind of people that not only have brought their cricketing talents to the club, but also put an awful lot into the development of the juniors, and they're out coaching on a Friday night with their youngsters and actually bringing that experience from a higher level of cricket, and they've just been invaluable to the club.
If you're happy to play at a level, I'm all for that.
Yep.
So many good players find their progress stalling in big clubs simply because somebody better is bought in. We'll have to grill Ray from Banstead about this when we've got a Premiership club representative sitting there in a few minutes' time. David Gentles, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you in again to chat about cricket, really, rather than just talk about South Nutfield.
My favourite subject.
That was absolutely lovely. You've got 5 seconds to give me a prediction for the Ashes.
England 4-1 is what I actually put money on this morning, so I might be a bit nervous now seeing what's happened in the last session, but as long as it's close and something like 2005, then I'll be happy.
David Gentles from South Nutfield CC, pleasure to see you.
Thank you.
My name's David Jay. Welcome back to the second hour and the third section of On the Front Foot here at Suzy 103.4. This is our August edition. And it's a real pleasure now to welcome for the first time to the show, which has been running for 4 seasons, a representative of one of our 2 local Premiership clubs. Now, Banstead, of course, are slightly out of our FM area because we're not allowed to go backwards, northwards, as it were, from Reigate Hill. But nonetheless, it's an absolute tremendous pleasure to welcome Ray Watson from Banstead Cricket Club. Ray, good evening, and it's lovely to see you.
Good evening, David. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a real delight that we've got someone from one of our local Premiership setups, and you've been at Banstead for a while yourself.
I've been at Banstead now for 22 years.
That's a fair old stretch anybody's imagination, isn't it? And tell us about the roles that you fulfil up there before we go on to talk about the club.
Well, I started when my son was 8, helping out with the junior side. Ended up being the manager of the side. Then the overall Colts manager stepped down, so I stepped into that role. Then the membership secretary decided to retire, so I then got offered that role. And when you get offered that job, you can't refuse, can you?
Is it a big administrative task looking after the youngsters at Banstead?
It is, yeah. There's 250 plus children. There are 15 sides, three nights of coaching, and the biggest challenge, I guess, we have is making sure everybody gets chances to play, that they get their fair time of coaching with our coaches. So, yeah, it's a big job.
We talk quite a bit about Colts cricket on the show, so I won't over-labour the point tonight. How many do you think feed through successfully on, a five-yearly basis into those senior sides?
We've got a pretty good track record. We will take, I'll give you an example in a moment, but we will take under-13s to play in senior cricket because we run four sides on a Saturday in league cricket. We've got the capacity to take them, but only if they're ready, if they're good enough. They're not, you know, cannon fodder. They're not just there to run around the outfield. And we see a regular development, but I guess like most clubs, we have a pyramid. We start with loads and loads of children in the younger age groups, and as school work and maybe jobs come along, it starts to filter down. But you know, last year I think we fielded, I think it was 18 juniors in senior cricket, and three of those playing in the first 11. Coming from the juniors, so yeah, there's quite a feed that comes through.
That's tremendous. And do you get involved in the Sunday Development League?
I personally don't. We have a manager that looks after that.
There is a side that bounced to
play. We play in the academy league.
Yeah, yep.
And that's very important because, as you know, you're allowed a number of senior players to play in that.
Yep.
But it also gives our youngsters a chance to learn 40 over plus.
Is that that's on where they wear coloured kit and stuff, isn't it?
That's coloured kit. It's,
yeah,
it's the thing now.
Well, the youngsters love that, don't they? When they get to play,
they do. And you know, the interesting thing is that they're very much brought up now on 20 over cricket. They play it as juniors. Mm. They watch 20 over cricket on the television. When you suddenly say to them, you know, would you like to play for the seniors on Saturday, and it's a timed match, 120 odd overs, it comes as a bit of a shock
yes.
to the system.
Yeah.
So this is what worries me slightly about the we were talking, that one of the chaps who was involved in drawing up these new regulations was here last month, the chap from Lingfield. I can't call his name to mind, but one of the things that worries me about that, and Jim and I have been involved more or less in school cricket for a very, very long time, is this sense that everything up to under 15 must be 20 overs only. And I think that's a backward step as far as the progression that Ray's just been talking about is concerned.
Well, as you say, Ray, it's difficult, isn't it, when they suddenly have to play, especially in a time match where there's a potential of a draw. It's totally alien to their
It's not in their mindset, which is why the academy side is good, because it's a stepping stone. It's a 40 over side game. It's how they want to play. It's coloured clothing. It's a result game, and then you know that will help us to identify those that are now strong enough to go and play the much longer game at league cricket. We also run two sides on a Sunday, which are social friendly matches. And we will put them, certainly start them in the Sunday threes, and then move them into Sunday twos.
The fact that you've got four Saturday sides as well I mean, obviously you're a big club, but it makes a huge difference, doesn't it, to bring youngsters through to play in third and fourth 11 cricket. Is a great way to start them off.
Yeah, and you know the we do have a challenge in selection sometimes, especially at the early part of the season when the kids are still doing, you know, exams and things. But if we can get them out on the field, you know the older players at the club understand that the kids are not there just to run around. That they, if they bat up free for their age group, they'll get a chance to bat 3, 4, 5 for the seniors.
Yeah, that's important.
We had a lad 3 weeks ago. We were one short in the fourth 11. We asked him to play, made his debut, scored 104 not out.
Wow.
Okay, the opposition wasn't the strongest, but nevertheless,
doesn't matter.
He suddenly moved from a 20 over game to, that was a 50 over game, which is, you know, quite incredible.
Do you have a waiting list for your Colts, or do they? I mean, there's a couple of clubs locally who have waiting lists. Do you have waiting lists at your club, or do you just try and get the youngsters, if they want to come in, you just bring them in?
We will take youngsters. As many as we can. The most we've had is 300. The challenge is not so much the coaching, because we can find the coaches. The challenge is to find them league matches.
Mm.
So we run two teams at most age groups, between under 9 through to under 14. There are two sides, so we can actually create those opportunities for them to play. And we have a rotation policy in the younger age groups that isn't pick your strongest 11 or your strongest 10 every week. It's about giving everybody in the squad a chance if they're ready to play. If it's hardball cricket, safety's the first issue.
Yeah, sure. Mm.
Tim, you mentioned Banstead are a big club. Can we switch to the perhaps to the history of a big club? Because I go back long enough to think about when I was a very small boy, the Pratt brothers, and then Roy Swetman coming back from Surrey to play for the club in the 60s. My own good friend and former pupil, Nick Faulkner, and David Ward, and so on. And in latter years, Tom Lansfield is back at the club, isn't he now?
He is indeed, yeah.
And Rory Burns has been involved. So there's quite a bit of history there.
Yeah, I brought a couple. I know we can't read them on the radio, but I brought a couple of books for you on the club. And there's a deep history, and we're, you know, obviously very proud of the players we developed for the Surrey side, and now we've Rory playing. He's our first club man to play for England. Scott Newman was also at Banstead. Scott made England A, but didn't quite make the main England side. So yeah, there's a lot of history there, and it's something we're very proud of.
I could never understand why David Ward never played for England. I have to say, when he was at his sort of peak, he should have played for England. He was that utility player that could easily have fitted in, especially in that era. There was a gap in the England team for him.
There was.
It was a real shame that he never played for England.
Yeah, Wardy could have done, and we always say, Jim, it's before your time, but we always say that Nick Faulkner was unlucky in so far as he went to Surrey and Percy
Alex Stewart this round about the same time.
Yeah. Went not really a cigarette paper between the two of them when they were playing for South of England schools, and then Pat Pocock retired, Ian Gregg came in, David Smith came back from Worcestershire.
Yeah.
Greggy said to Nick, sorry, Smithy's playing in front of you. Nick went down the road to Sussex, and the year after, Smithy had yet another ruck at the Oval and followed him to Sussex, and he was pitched out the team. They're really, between Alec and Nick, when they were 18 years old, there was a cigarette paper. Except maybe Nick was a little bit more likely to nick it off to second slip, I always thought. But there we are, yeah. Happy days. Well, history certainly, Ray, but let's talk about now. A big spread in the local paper at the beginning of the season. It's Dan Newton, isn't it?
Dan Newton, the
skipper.
Captain,
yeah. Big spread and aims for the club. And I know you've got a little summary of aims yourself. You're back in the Premiership, where Banstead absolutely belong.
Yeah.
How do you think it's all going?
That's a good question. It's not going as well as we expected. We brought in a very good overseas player, Cameron Gannon, who's first class in Queensland, incredibly fast, very, very professional, good middle order batsman. But we've had a few poor results around games where we should have won, which means instead of challenging, you know, Reigate and now Molesey at the top of the table, we're kind of comfortably mid-table, but that's not where we want to be. We're ambitious. We do want to win things, but we want to win it in the right way. And you know, our longer term ambition is that we start to bring a lot more of our younger players, and there's some real talent in the 14, 15, 16 year ages, start to bring them through to play first team cricket.
Mm.
Our challenge is to keep them, because obviously of all the other distractions, but if we can keep them, that's how we'll build the team, with the occasional player brought from other clubs who wants to come and play for us. But
you've got the second ground out the back there, obviously. So does that mean it's four sides on a Saturday?
Yep.
And is there potential anywhere locally to get an extra ground, the same way as Reigate Priory do, for a sort of an outground from time to time?
It's something we're investigating.
Yeah.
We can certainly get out grounds for junior cricket. Some Sundays we'll have four home matches. Obviously we can only field two, so we use local schools. We do a lot of work with the local schools in terms of, you know, putting coaches into them and using their fields and stuff. As for finding another ground that's ready for senior cricket, that's much more of a challenge. and it's not that easy.
Although I would have thought that there must be grounds going to the wall on a fairly regular basis, maybe not around Banstead Way, you know. I'd completely forgotten until, Tim, you called in at the Fire Brigade event that our Neil was doing a broadcast from. I'd completely forgotten there was a little cricket ground in there.
I didn't know there was.
And
there
used to be one. I don't know whether there still is. There used to be one at Cannon. I've played on the ground in Cannon on Cockshot Hill.
I didn't know that either.
It's extraordinary, but equally, as Ray says, you're talking about senior cricket.
Well, that's the problem, I guess, is that you can find a ground and then it's got to be properly maintained. If you're going to play senior cricket, you've got to make sure someone's, you know, making sure the pitch is okay, and you can't just turn up to, you know, some field somewhere. So that's, I guess, where the challenge is.
I guess that's the thing for us. You know, we have professional grounds and work on our grounds. To find another ground, we'd have to bring it up to the standard that would be expected of playing against Banstead, which is great. But the issue then is, well, okay, there's a cost issue involved, and you know, what does that do to club costs?
Yeah.
So it's a real chicken and egg situation. Yeah. But
Richard Condy is still around, is he?
Richard is still around,
because of course I knew Richard when he was with Cricket Ground Services all those years ago, and Clive Wesson, who's sadly no longer with us,
Richard's two sons, Michael and Nick, are our groundsmen.
Ah, I see. Keep it in the family, folks.
they are professionally trained and contracted. It's not a
handed down wisdom. And does that mean that the background is in pretty good condition as well?
Yeah, the square's great. The outfield can be a bit wobbly.
Wow!
If it dries out, it can have a wobble or two.
I think non-wobbly outfields are a luxury wherever you go. Aren't they? You know.
I don't think I've ever played in one of those.
No, it makes you think. You know, David was saying, wasn't he, or somebody, Jim was saying earlier on about Jason Roy's pickup, the final ball of the World Cup final.
Yeah.
Well, you look at Lords; it's better than my living room carpet.
Well, that's going to say it's like a bowling green, isn't it? When you sit and watch, when you're at those sort of grounds, and you actually see how nice and flat they are, and you think, oh, some of the grounds I've had to play over the years, you know, there's ruts on it and everything. It's amazing.
Ray, one of your little flags that you wave at Banstead is newsletters and promotion of events.
That's right. Yeah.
I don't want to come and do a Susie Radio bit of promotion and newsletter writing, do you? Seriously, tell us what that involves.
Basically, we have a lot of people at the club who volunteer and do different things, you know, run events for us. My job is just to make sure that we get that news out to the membership in time. It sometimes means writing the copy for the newsletter. Sometimes it means taking someone's already written work and just posting it. The other thing that we do is we use the newsletter every week to promote our sponsors. We're very keen on sponsorship's an interesting thing, because some sponsorship is all about how much money you're going to give me and thank you very much, whereas very, very much was, you know, let's work as a partnership, let's work together on this. And the newsletter promotion is part of it. You know, if we have any events, we have programs, they get placed into the programs. It takes time. It takes time, but it's valuable to us because it's the quickest and easiest way. I think we publish now to something like 700 people each week in our newsletter. So it's
a big circulation, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, when I started doing it many, many years ago, it was done by post.
Right, of course,
And it was a 4-page print.
Nice and cheap.
Lots of envelopes to be licked and stamps to be placed.
I still slightly lament the demise of the formal fixture card, but I suppose in the days of the web, it's completely and utterly the way that we all must go. I mean, you're a bit of a traditionalist, Jim.
Yes, well, we haven't produced I am, but the guy who does our publicity and whatever is a real techie. So we've run through a website for a long, long while. And we haven't printed a fixture card in years and years.
It's funny, but you mentioned play cricket. I mean, play cricket is a great tool. You're quite right. There's nothing worse though than when I remember getting a score at. I think it was either at Reed School or St John's School for Leatherhead against somebody. I scored about 75, 76 against this club. Great innings by me. I don't often get them like that. And The club, the other team we were playing folded at the end of the season. So of course, play cricket just expunge it from the records. Yeah. So it just disappears forever. So it never existed. That is frustrating.
It's all right, Tim. We know. Of course, you've told us.
Well, we still publish a fixture booklet.
Mm.
3 years ago, 2015, 4 years ago now, we decided that we wouldn't do it. And there was, I wouldn't call it uproar, but there were protests from the senior members at the club who don't rely or don't want to rely on websites and play cricket and things, that they wanted a little book they could put in the car and check the fixtures, and so we brought it back.
Mm-hmm. And does that carry sponsorship?
Carry sponsorship.
Make plenty of money, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Well, we charge for advertising in it. Our major sponsors get a free advert, which is part of their sponsorship package. But the members like it. They like a book that they can refer to.
What's the local financial support like for a big club like yourselves?
It's not as good as we'd like it to be. Without getting into to finances, we get less than probably £8,000 a year in terms of local sponsorship. But then when we run a big event like our music festival a couple of weeks back, we'll have an individual sponsor for that gives us extra money for naming rights and things. So we've got a few smart guys at the club who understand the marketing and the sponsorship, and we'll go out and get work for us or get advertising for us. But it's a challenge, Banstead is a popular area, but we've got cricket, we've got football, we've got rugby, there's a lot of call and demand on...
Yeah, I mean, they call Banstead a village, but it's a big village, isn't it?
We like to call it a village, but it's a very big village.
Yeah.
So you held a big fundraising week or weekend last month. Yes. How did that go?
It was fantastic. We did it last year, low-key, tried it. It worked. We modelled it on the one that Oxted and Limpsfield run. Music and beer were the two main attractions.
What cricketers like. Can't go wrong.
We reached out through the local community. We had people doing Facebook and Twitter and things. Last year we broke even. This year we turned a profit. So our challenge is to make it bigger and better. You refer to the fact we have two grounds. Next year, the plan, fingers crossed, approvals and everything else, we'll actually run it on the back field so we can actually have it more like a festival rather than in a marquee, which is where it was this year.
Yep.
It means shifting one fixture to do that. Which we will do.
Price worth paying, I would have thought. And your cricket week comes relatively late in the season compared with many. Next week, I think.
It's next week.
Tell us a bit about that, Ray. What's going on?
Cricket week, right. Well, we still stick to the tradition of cricket every day. So we have matches every day. We have a regular... we play a different side every year on the Monday. On the Tuesday, we play Brighton. There's a lot of history between our two clubs, friendly history. On Wednesday it's President's Day, so the President, Nick Potter, brings his team, who are all made up of the best players in Sussex, to play Tom Lancefield's Chairman's 11. Thursday, Brighton, Brunswick, and then Friday we play the Paralytics, which many people would have heard of.
That's a social fixture, is it?
They're all social fixtures.
Yeah.
As social as you can make the best players in Sussex versus
I was just thinking that with a team name like that, it's probably more sociable than other fixtures.
It is, but it's incredibly competitive. They have some very, very good players.
And do you still manage to fit any declaration cricket into your cricket week? Or is it all over stuff?
No, they're declaration games.
No.
Yeah, they decorate. We have a second game on a Wednesday on the backfield where we play a local wandering side called Pawnbrokers, and that's a limited overs game. Mm. But no, we like the time games are the tradition.
Yeah.
And a tradition that lends itself to a cricket week,
exactly.
In my view, without any doubt at all. Because you get your lunch and you get your tea, you get your intervals and your last hour and so on. Yeah.
Well, also, the game's never sort of dead, is it? Even if one side's scored a hatful of runs, the team that's going in second can try and get a draw. And there's nothing worse than the first team scoring loads and it's all over.
But if it's cricket week, there is also the incentive to do the sort of thing that we used to do with the president. guidance game, Jim. Mm. Get 200 and some odd and give them a chance.
Yeah, exactly. Yes,
that's right.
Which you can't do when league points are at stake.
No, there's a little bit of friendly bowling goes on.
Yeah.
Quite right, too.
You know, and on Monday as well, we're running a junior tournament for 10 to 12 year olds with 32 kids coming along to take part in that, which is an all day event.
Wow.
So
it's a busy week then.
Busy week. Oh, yeah. And then there's the fundraising events in the evenings as well.
Yeah.
Quiz nights, race nights, golf nights.
You're going to be a broken man by the end of that, Ray.
Yeah, I'm broken now.
And are things like your quiz nights regular, or is it a once a year attached to the festival?
Once or twice a year.
Yeah. Are they good money spinners? Lots of people do quizzes now. Yeah. I suppose it's fairly easy to
say. We've learnt over time that if you constantly repeat something, your numbers go down.
I'm sure that's very, very wise. You mentioned your attempts to involve the club with local schools, and clearly Banstead Cricket Club is keen to be as big a part of the community overall as it can.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we take part in May Day parades. You know, we offer all the local schools, if they come to us, we give them vouchers for membership for the following year for the children. That they use our grounds for the state school quick cricket competitions. Mm. The independents use us for their more structured coaching and matches. So it's very important to us, because obviously, as a club, their youngsters, we want them to be our members. So, you know, and we want their parents to join us on the social side.
Yeah.
Which works for us.
Time flies, and it's sitting on our shoulders yet again. Take a glimpse into the future for us before we finish, Ray. You've said that the club are quite rightly an ambitious club now that they're back in the Premiership. What's the sort of plan for the next 5 years or so?
Okay, the plan for the next 5 years is very straightforward: to retain Premiership status and challenge for honours. To maintain our second 11 and our third 11s in the Premiership, although that will be a challenge this year. And our big objective is, because we own the backfield as opposed to the front field is leased from the council, we want to build a new pavilion. It's going to cost an absolute fortune. That's our fundraising is focused on that. It would be great if I had a pound for every member that said to me, when I win the lottery, Ray, we could probably build it, you know. But that's our long-term objective, is to build a new pavilion.
Presumably you could get lottery funding, could you, or apply for
it? You can get ECB grants, lottery funding. You can even get, you know, matching bank loans, but you've got to have if you were looking for, say, £1 million, you'd have to have something like £300,000 already.
Yeah.
In order to, attract the extra funding.
Yeah.
You can't just rock up and say...
No, you've got to raise some yourself before they'll start matching it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Two last things, because, as I say, time is flying. We could go on for much longer, I'm sure. Sadly, the all-star local derby, the Saturday before last, was washed out.
Yeah.
Because that would have been a serious contest, I expect.
It would.
Between you and the so-called Llamas, there it was. The rain intervened, and then a soggy pitch at Park Lane intervened even further, and suddenly it's no longer in their hands if East Molesey keep on winning.
I think I jinxed that last month by saying that they had it in the bag, and I think old
did you say that?
Yeah, I think Andy sort of winced when I said that last month. So
it was a real shame about that game, because our lads were really up for it.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, you'll appreciate there is a good rivalry between clubs. And it's a great rivalry. You know, it's fantastic to see Jason Roy of Reigate and Rory Burns of Banstead opening the batting for England.
Mm. Yes, indeed.
And that rivalry is
indeed.
But, yeah.
You know, it was the right decision.
Yeah.
Oh, without question. And my second question is, what about the Ashes? What's the result going to be?
There's a question. I think it depends on Jimmy Anderson's fitness, which I think is in real doubt. But I think England will probably win or draw this game. And then it's all on if Geoffrey Archer's then available, and whether Ollie Stone can come up to the bowling. I don't think there's a problem with the batting, really. I think it's in the four bowlers department.
Give us a prediction then.
I think England will win the Ashes.
Jolly good. We like to have patriots in our hot seat. I think we have to call it quits there. Ray Watson from Banstead Cricket Club, it's been a delight, as I said at the start, to have a representative of one of our two Premiership clubs with us at last, and do please come back and see us again.
I'd love to. Thank you for inviting me.
We'll look forward to that. Thank you. Welcome back to the final part of this evening's On the Front Foot. This is the August edition of Susie Radio's Cricket Chat Show. Jim Grant back with us now up in the hotter seats, and Tim Bowling still the other side of the panel. Two fascinating and articulate guests, gentlemen.
Yes, very good, weren't they? Really,
yeah.
And an interesting contrast, as you were saying, between the two clubs, the sort of scale of operations.
Yeah, we don't often get clubs as big as Banstead in here, and it's interesting to hear Ray talking about the different challenges that a bigger club has relative to most of the clubs which we have in, which are small, and most small clubs are struggling for people and all that. Whereas Ray's looking for more funding and trying to, you know, take it to that next level.
Yeah. East Grinstead are the other big club that we've had in, because they're within our transmission area, and Lewis Hatchett was an absolutely splendid guest with his experience of Aussie great.
That's right, very interesting.
I didn't realise how many games he'd played for Sussex Seconds, but that's something that can talk to him about another time. Let's just whiz through the club stuff, because the Ashes are what we really want to talk about in the time that's left to us. It's Merston Magics and Hawley Strollers. I think we mentioned this to David earlier on. Merston Magics and Hawley Strollers are the two sides progressing in the Surrey Slam, the local T20. And as Ray just alluded to, last Saturday, Reigate Priory would have been better off not playing. Top of the table clash, East Molesey, bowled East Molesey out for 120 at Park Lane, 110 for 5 chasing, and lost by 5 runs.
Oh,
they lost 5 wickets for 10 runs, and if East Molesey keep on winning, the title is suddenly out of the Priory's hands, having led from start till now. So Banstead were indeed washed out. Chepstow Causdon, while Countians washed out in Division 2, they stay top. Dorking hung on for a draw. Merstham fell foul to the weather. They're 8th. They're clear of the drop, but they are struggling this season, very much so, in spite of Simon Rivers, who you two won't actually remember, but a forceful grammar school player in the noughties. Simon is back there. Washouts in the Sussex Premiership. Roffey at the top, East Grinstead 5th. Three Bridges still are 7th, and poor old Ifield, Sussex Division 2, they're just nailed to the bottom there. They are it's one of those situations, as in football, where a club tumbles out of the Premiership and next year they go down another.
Yeah, it happens a lot
at Leatherhead. Same thing happened for the Threes at Leatherhead.
Crawley Eagles washed out, they're only one place off the bottom. And local derby, Crawley 113 for 7 went down to Felbridge and Sunnyside 166 for 3 in a match reduced to 20 overs. Felbridge 4th, Crawley now 6th. As I alluded to, Newdigate played, and they are top now of the Fullers Premiership, so they're in with a shout of Championship Division 5. Hawley Ones couldn't quite get over the line. They drew. They were 4 short with 3 wickets left against Putney. They're 8 points clear at the top. Still candidates, Tim, for our club of the season.
Yes, indeed.
Didn't get a report from Hawley Twos this week, and South Nutfield, as we said, are top of the Surrey Downs by 61 points. And Outward played. They beat Spell Hurst. Their seconds were washed out, but Outward are back at the top of KCVL Division 1 by 5 points. Turning to the counties, Jim, disappointing season for Surrey.
Yes, I don't know what's quite gone on there, really. I haven't been paying very close attention to it, I'll admit, but
after the back of last season,
you would have thought, you know.
It's weird, isn't it, how it
seemed not to have.
There's no sort of follow through, is there, from last season? They don't seem to have kicked on at all. But it's very, very strange. They were 6th, I think, last time I checked in Division 1, 6th out of 8. So not great.
But I'm not sure now that it's 8 and 10, whether it's 1 up, 2 down, how it works. I must look into it.
I don't know.
Whatever's happening, Notts have had a desperate season and they're nailed to the bottom.
Yeah, they're going down, aren't they? Notts
Division 1. And Sussex have just imploded totally. I was with Jonty Jenner in Jersey yesterday, Tim, and clearly had he just been a couple of years later being picked up by Sussex, who are now hiring Varun Chopra from Essex or wherever.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
To bolster their batting and struggling always round. And they are 8th out of 10 now, and they're just 19 points off the bottom.
Well, they've got virtually the same record in Division 2 that Surrey have got in Division 1. Played 10, won 2, drawn 4, lost 4. So it's more or less the same as Surrey in the lower league. But, you know, as you say, it's just odd how they've imploded.
While we're talking about the county championship, two to bid farewell to, one will only mean anything to you as an item of history. You may just remember Jack Bond, although only a couple of years after Malcolm Nash, who we'll talk about in a second. Jack Bond was the instigator, along with Clive Lloyd, of Lancashire's hugely successful one-day side in the early 70s, and always remembered. He was bits and pieces cricketer, shrewd captain, but yet another one of those occasions. My father never let me forget that I chose to go out for the afternoon when the famous Barbarians All Blacks game took place at Twickenham, so I missed seeing that live. And there was a, would it have been a Gillette Cup final in those days, possibly, against Kent, and Kent were romping away with it. Asif Iqbal, as a name you may remember, was 80-odd not out. Kent were strolling it, and Asif hit this off drive that went in the air, and little Jackie Bond chucked himself horizontally about 10 feet, caught it one-handed, and my father never let me forget that I hadn't seen that either. So RIP Jack Bond. And Malcolm Nash, of course, is the name that you will know as the bowler who was hit for six sixes Sobers in an over by Gary Sobers at St Helens in Swansea. And the story is that they showed little bits and pieces of cricket on the BBC in those days, including county games, and probably on BBC Wales, this one, but they'd finished the transmission, and Wilf Wooler said, "Sobers is batting, let's keep the cameras rolling and I'll keep talking." And that's how the six sixes
was captured.
And Roger Davis catches the fifth one on the boundary and falls over backwards, and it's eventually signalled six. And then the famous remark when Sobers hits the last one out of the ground, and Wooler says, "It's gone all the way down to Swansea." And quite
extraordinary. The bowler played on till he was in I think it was something like 1983 or something. He played county cricket.
Oh, yes.
He went on a long time, didn't he?
And he's not made old bones, Malcolm Nash. He was only in his early 70s. Yeah. But there we are. And, of course, it's been done since, notably by Yuvraj Singh to Stuart Broad, which took a young bowler down a peg or two, who has performed admirably today, let us say. And Ravi Shastri did it in a first-class game, but Sobers was the first. And I still think you can say whatever you like. I know you can't match up cricketers from different eras, and you can talk about whether Morgan's 148 or Richards' 189 was the greater innings at Old Trafford. Well, I know which I'd choose, given the circumstances and everything else. But Gary Sobers, to me, is the absolute paragon. There will never be a greater cricketer walk the earth, in my humble opinion, to be able to bowl fast, quick left arm swinging deliveries and orthodox left arm and Chinaman and Googlies, catch 200 odd in test matches at slip and round the corner, and 8,000 test runs at 57.
Amazing.
Staggering. Absolutely staggering. And still with us, thank goodness.
Yes indeed.
Gentlemen, we alluded to Stuart Broad and the Ashes. Let's talk about today for 5 minutes and then widen it out. What have you made of events at Edgbaston today?
Well, extraordinary topsy-turvy day. It would look like, well, I think possibly might still prove to have been a sort of good toss to lose. I suspect Root would have bowled anyway.
Do you think he would have done? Did he say that?
No, he didn't. He was asked that question on the radio, evaded that question. But I think, he'd have had a bit of a dilemma. And it was all going swimmingly, wasn't it? The injury to Anderson is obviously a concern, not just for this match, but possibly for the series.
Yeah, that is worrying, isn't it?
Although I think we've got seam bowling resources. I mean, I just wonder. It's the benefit of hindsight, isn't it? I wonder whether picking two, in relative terms, aging senior bowlers might now look a little risky, especially if one of them has been, you know, struggling with this injury, that it seems to be a recurrence of the same injury.
Well, David, you said earlier on when we were off air that it's, the irony is that, that Jofra Archer wasn't selected because of the side strain, not 100% fit, so they select James Anderson, who now is probably out for the rest of the test.
And his fitness, no more proven than Jofra Archer's was at 10:30 this morning.
You know,
because you've got to play a four-day game to prove your fitness for a test match, haven't you? But I just wonder, it's been scratching at the back of my mind this evening, whether James Anderson is playing his final test match.
Yeah, well, it's if possible. If it's not his final test match, I'd be pretty sure it's his final series. He may come back later in the series potentially, but if it's a recurrence of that old injury, he could well be out for the rest of the summer.
He's been quoted as saying he wants to play another two Ashes after these. Richard Hadlee played till he was 40.
That's
test
true.
Cricket.
I think if you are sort of looked after, as it were, and that's clearly what they've been trying to do.
But the problem is going to be for Anderson. Now he's got that injury, is that it's going to recur more and more frequently. So if he does manage to come back and keep playing, you'll see that injury recur if he does play for another 2 years fairly frequently.
What's perhaps more worrying to me is that Jofra Archer hasn't been playing four-day cricket.
No.
He's got a side strain playing 10 50-over games.
He's playing a Sussex Seconds game. He's going to start tomorrow.
Well, we shall see what we shall see.
3-day game.
Well, it's worrying, given he's only, how old is he, 20?
Is he that young?
No, 24.
Oh, is he? Okay, 24. Yeah. But even then, that's young to still be getting those sort of injuries based on the amount of cricket he's played this summer.
But, yes.
You know,
and it's relentless, this one, you know, game a week. I mean, in the old days, you know, you had breaks between test matches and
it's all packed in now, isn't it?
Time.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah. We even had the rest day, didn't you?
Yes.
And I think as well, in between, they might go off and play for their counties, but probably nobody, bar Fred perhaps. I expect Fred bowled full split for Yorkshire. But I don't suppose I don't suppose Bob Willis ever bowled flat out for Surrey or for Warwickshire like he did in test matches.
Possibly not, no.
And you know, the batsmen, well, they were taking a few easy runs off county attacks, having a net, weren't
they? It's a different kind of and a different approach to fitness, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, the fast bowlers would feel down a deep fine leg and they'd stick a boot out to try and stop it. They wouldn't be flinging themselves around in quite the same way.
And by the same token, if Fred or Brian Statham was doing exactly that, both had phenomenal arms.
Yes.
And in those days, a throw that nobody would even take any notice of nowadays would attract a round of applause from the spectators
if somebody
got it in from third man over the top. Because that didn't happen.
No.
And you're exercising by bowling, so you're exercising, you're keeping toned the muscles that you use when you bowl, and not worry, you know, just by doing it.
1,200 overs a year rather than a career.
Yeah.
Quite extraordinary. We've talked about Fred on the show before, obviously. Yeah. Anyway, there's the bowling thing. I thought Ollie Stone picked himself up very nicely in the Ireland game. He looked as if he's got a bit of pace, but you see, he's had stress injuries, hasn't he, already? And Sam Curran got wickets, thank goodness, because otherwise the game would have gone against Ireland. And he's now... Could you not have played Sam Curran rather than Anderson in this game?
Well, I think that's a slightly benefit of hindsight stuff. I think there was a degree to which, you know, he's a talisman, Anderson, isn't he, to bring him back. They obviously felt through their medical team. I mean, there's not, you know, they're absolutely looked after in a way that cricketers have never been in the past. So they must have been reasonably confident that he was going to
It just went, didn't it? It just went when he was bowling, and there's nothing you can do.
But I agree with you. I like Sam Curran. I think he's the future. I think Wokes is now an Anderson replacement. He's a really skilled swing and seam bowler, I think. And I like Curran, left arm over, a bit of movement, slightly slower pace, a different kind of problem for batsmen to face. And they have a lot of left-handers in their team, and he'd be swinging it away from them.
And you mentioned Anderson being talismanic, Jim. Is Curran not talismanic every time the England batting gets in a hole?
Yes, crikey. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the crucial things in the looking ahead, not just for this match, but for this series, is top-order runs for England, which have been a problem. We're really banking on Roy to deliver, aren't we?
Yeah.
We survived the two overs tonight, didn't we?
Yes, 10 for none.
I mean, mean, there's big pressure, as we said earlier, on both Roy and Burns, for different reasons, but there is big pressure on both of them. But Burns needs to, he needs to perform.
It's been a problem for a few years for England, hasn't it? And we've got a middle order that, that from time to time really clearly does dig them out of a hole, and we do bat deep, as they say, but you, it's not going to, you know, that won't happen every... every match.
I wonder whether I mean, he hasn't even batted yet, but I wonder how secure Denley's position is in that side. You know, as we say, Burns needs to get a total. There are other players that you could easily bring in and as replacements there.
I agree. I think both of those names you've mentioned are there in part by default because other people have been tried and fallen away.
Absolutely.
I mean, Denley's age is a clear indication of that. And Burns has been doing the business in the Championship for a good few seasons.
Yeah, well, we've been banging the drum for Rory Burns for ages, and then he's got into the side and he's never really...
He's horribly out of
Of touch, isn't he? And it's really interesting, you know, he is the epitome of the county cricket, scoring 1,000 runs every season, playing week in, week out in that sense. It's a bit of a different life, the centrally contracted professional English professionals are different.
Indeed.
You have to adjust to it.
Let me bring you back to this morning, if I may, because I've got one eye on the clock, and Tim and I were exchanging texts this morning, Jim, that first 20 minutes, which to me resembled nothing more than a Whitehall farce.
It was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Quite extraordinary. The palpable nick down the leg side, which in a way, Jim, reinforces what you're saying about Curran coming left arm over the wicket, and Broad was round the wicket.
Yes.
And Warner looked palpably uncomfortable in a way that Smith did not.
It was bizarre, that first ball, though, because I didn't manage to watch all of the cricket today, I was at work, but I managed to watch a little bit this morning, and I heard the nick, and clearly Bairstow heard that nick off the first ball. Nobody else did. Broad made no reaction at all. No review. All right, it didn't really cost us many runs in the end, but it could have done. And it was very odd that nothing was made of that by the players.
I said to you earlier, I think that your phrase, Tim, Bairstow has cried wolf once too often by going for these ridiculous reviews every time he's given out LBW without even consulting the guy at the other end. And the other thing, it seemed to me, Jim, was that Stuart Broad is known for appealing for anything, and he didn't go up for that.
No, that's interesting.
Well, I just couldn't understand how he hadn't heard that, because it was audible on the microphone.
As you say, it's nowhere near anything else, is it? It could only be bad.
Yeah. Well, they did the snicko, and it was clearly was bad, and it carried to Bairstow and everything. It wasn't
odd,
a bump ball or anything.
So.
Sorry, were you going to say something else, John?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I can't remember a day's cricket where the umpires have got so many decisions wrong, just about every decision wrong, actually.
And Dharmasena wasn't even standing.
No. And the comment was made on the Sky commentary that maybe, you know, they started to lose confidence. That they obviously really, you know, there's no hiding place from your mistakes when you make them.
Some of them were terrible.
And they were poor.
Really? It was almost like, at the end.
But it would have been, without the decision review system, it would have been a very different day's cricket.
Yes, it would.
In the old days, it would have been very different.
Well, we were saying also,
Siddle would have gone for a start.
Yeah.
In.
Well, Smith was fortunate that he had a review at that time.
Yes.
He was given out. If he'd have run out of reviews, by that stage, he would have been gone, and he ended up scoring 144.
I mean, that was a terrible decision, wasn't it?
I haven't seen that yet.
He leaves one alone, knowing, as he really always does, exactly as world-class players do, exactly where his off stump is, even though he fidgets about, he knows where his stumps are, and it has come back a little bit, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's hit him on the knee roll, outside the line of off stump. But it was never coming. You could see live. Never coming back enough.
No.
So then in the early phase, Broad does talk Root into a review that was palpably not out LBW.
Mm.
And then when Warner finally was given out LBW, that was missing the leg stump as well.
Yes,
and
was the other guy. Heads was missing
I haven't seen that.
That was missing leg stump by a long way.
But they were making the point on, I don't know whether it was on Sky or TMS, but they were saying that it's going to get to the point now where the non-striker in Test, or in any cricket where there's a review system, is going to have to stand almost next to the bowler. bowler in order to be able to give the striking bats more of an idea as to what was going on. Because I think when Warner was given out, and it wasn't out, but obviously he had to go, I can't remember who the non-striker was, but they were standing fairly wide. There was no way of them being able to tell whether that was LBW or not. But so they were saying that we will get to the point where they will stand almost next to the bowler in order to see what's going on.
Well, there's no reason why they can't stand as close to the stumps in their own ground as they wish. I suspect that this is sometimes complicated by the presence of short legs and silly points and so on, and the necessity to run in a straight line.
Yes.
Interestingly, Sophie Eccleston, we won't have much time to talk about the women's Ashes, maybe just as well, but Sophie Eccleston, I noticed on the TV, they kept on using the camera and the umpire's hat, because she starts her slow left arm round the wicket run-up directly in front of the umpire. In front of the umpire. Right. Quite extraordinary. So, yes, what a fascinating first 20 minutes, and then, not for the first time, 9-10 Jack frustrate an England fielding captain.
It happens more and more in Test cricket, though, generally, doesn't it? I'd be interested to see what the statistics are of this, but it feels increasingly like, you know, once the hardness goes out of the new ball, somebody sticks around, and tail enders bat better than they used to, don't they? I mean,
well, they talked about the pitch today being quite sticky, didn't they? So it was picking up moisture as well, so the ball was fairly soft at the end. But yeah, as you say, it does seem to happen more in Test cricket these days.
I think also there were periods of cloudiness and periods of sunshine, and it was definitely under the cloud cover, swinging a bit. There was help. You know, there was help for the bowlers right from the word.
Well, also the Duke's ball was the ball with the enlarged seam that Ashley Giles had he'd junked the original one, hadn't he? And he demanded a new ball, and they brought that in. And so, I mean, I guess that was maybe one of the reasons why Jimmy Anderson was playing, is that trying to keep him out of a side where they've suddenly produced a new ball with the seam raised as it was. There's no way he was not going to. He was.
But they were bowling with a kind of the old scrambled seam quite a lot.
Yes, that's right.
Ball was bowling sort of cutters.
Well, they talked about that scramble scene quite a bit, and they were saying that the commentary team on Sky were saying that that how much more of the norm it is now to see that. And back in the day, I mean, Gower said that it was just seam up. You never saw that scrambled scene. Now it's almost a stock ball for most of those bowlers, and you see it all the time with the seam going.
It's come from T20, hasn't it?
Yeah.
The necessity to develop a range of slower deliveries and try to upset batsmen in that way. Well, whatever happened, there it went, and England struggled. 100 and how many did they add in the end? The last two wickets?
160 odd, I think.
Yeah, they were 122 for 8, 210 for 9, 284 all out. So, you know, not bad. 122 for 8, we were on top there.
You have to say he's a phenomenon, Smith. I mean, you have to say that in the modern game, there's been Tendulkar, there's been these, you know, there have been some great players, but he stands head and shoulders.
Well, he loves batting, doesn't
he? The numbers
he's an old-fashioned batsman that loves batting. There's not many of them left in
but
Test
he's
cricket.
But he's absolutely, absolutely idiosyncratic in his technique. The bat is lifted up towards gully, which is apparently, although I never saw him live, where Bradman's bat went. And Lara had a similarly exaggerated high back. I mean, he's, you know, Lara's the sort of immediate predecessor in terms of phenomena, isn't he? I mean, his numbers, he converts 50% of his 50s into 100s.
Yes.
In the first innings batting for Australia in Test matches, he averages 100.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary. I mean, that is Bradman-esque,
that
literally.
That is Bradman-esque, absolutely it is. And that's where the runs count.
Well, when you look at the scorecard, it's even more incredible that the fact that he scored 144 runs out of 284, he got half the runs, you know, without him, it was game, set and match.
Yeah, he just has an extraordinary eye and capacity for concentration and focus, I think.
Yeah.
Still got booed by the denizens of the Hollies stand, mind.
Well, inevitable, wasn't it?
And disappointing. Well, when he came out, maybe. And
I think you're right. I think walking out fair dues, but not.
I love football and I go to football as well, and there's a place for that kind of football's the right place for that kind of boorishness. I cricket, I expect you expect something better, really.
Just a couple of quick ones off the back of today, and then we're going to have to leave it here tonight. Numbers and names on the back of white Test match shirts?
Oh, I was really horrible.
Well, also, the Australian numbers were so big and bold on the short. They were
shiny.
Yeah, and the ridiculous thing was, is they put jumpers on, and the jumpers haven't got numbers on. So what's the point?
Ridiculous.
It just, it didn't, I didn't understand that. I know it's all to do with the World Test Championship and all that stuff.
Pointless.
But to me, pointless. Now, on the scorecard, there were no numbers against the players' names anyway. No.
Really?
So, pointless. Utterly pointless.
Completely.
You know, and they're picking their own numbers, Route 66 and all this stuff. It just becomes a commercial venture almost. It's
just
wasting time.
Just mention it in passing, because they were talking about it this morning at the start of the transmission. This is the very first game in this World Test Championship with such an arcane set of rules that I don't think even Warne and Sangakkara between themselves could really understand what was going on. But
no.
It's an attempt to breathe life into Test
cricket.
Yeah,
and
give
it
some context.
Yeah, at least if it does result in Test cricket being a little bit more or given a stay of execution, if you like. That's, I mean, there's a final. Apparently, the final was in the UK. Is what it says here in the UK, in England in 2021.
Okay.
Top two teams out of the nine that are in this particular championship. If it's a 2-year competition, so
well, it's not quite. You know, it's not what you would call a final throw of the dice by any means.
No.
But I do feel I'll be surprised if Test cricket as we know it and understand it outside the Ashes and maybe Test series against South Africa and New Zealand possibly is as it is in 10 years time.
10 seconds each for an Ashes prediction, because we're going to have to leave it there.
I'm worried about the overconfidence amongst English supporters. I've thought for a long time, I think Cummins is going to probably turn it on. I suspect their seam bowling might be a bit good for our top order, with the possible exception of Root. I think it's going to be very close, but I think we'll just nick it 2-1.
Okay.
3-2 England.
Right you are. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll have to save the Ruth Strauss Foundation for yet another show. I do want to get round to talking about that, because that's something that's really important to me. Jim, thanks very much. Travel safe and see you soon. Likewise, Tim. I leave you with a line from Boris Johnson before he was elected as leader of the Conservative Party. Mr. Johnson took aim at Geoffrey Boycott, Mrs. May's cricketing hero, saying it was time that a Botham became Tory leader. He said the approach to negotiations needed to change dramatically. There's now only one way to do this. I think we've had quite a lot of Boycott at the wicket, and it's time for Botham to come in. On which note, thank you for listening to On the Front Foot. Thank you for joining us tonight. We'll be back with the September edition.